Chapter 9. Occasionally, events in one's life become clearer through the prism of experience, a phrase which simply means that things tend to become clearer as time goes on. For instance, when a person is just born, they usually have no idea what curtains are and spend a great deal of their first months wondering why on earth Mommy and Daddy have hung large pieces of cloth over each window in the nursery. But as the person grows older, the idea of curtains becomes clearer through the prism of experience. The person will learn the word curtains and notice that they are actually quite handy for keeping a room dark when it is time to sleep, and for decorating an otherwise boring window area. Eventually, they will entirely accept the idea of curtains and may even purchase some curtains of their own, or Venetian blinds, and it is all due to the prism of experience. Coach Genghis's SORE program, however, was one event that didn't seem to get any clearer at all through the Baudelaire orphan's prism of experience. If anything, it grew even harder and harder to understand, because Violet, Klaus, and Sunny became so utterly exhausted as the days, and, more particularly, the nights, wore on. After the children received their second message from Carmelita Spatz, they spent the rest of the afternoon wondering what Coach Genghis would make them do that evening. The Quagmire triplets wandered along with them, so everyone was surprised. The Baudelaires, who met Genghis out on the front lawn after dinner again, and the Quagmires, who tiptoed out of the recital and spied on them, in shifts, from behind the archway again, when Genghis began blowing his whistle and ordered the Baudelaire orphans to begin running. The Baudelaires and Quagmires thought that surely Genghis would do something far more sinister than more laps. But while a second evening of running laps might have lacked in sinisterity, Violet, Klaus, and Sunny were too exhausted to notice. They could scarcely hear the shrieks of Genghis's whistle and his cries of, "Keep running!" and "Another lap!" over the sound of their own desperate panting for breath. They grew so sweaty that the orphans thought they would give up the entire Baudelaire fortune for a good long shower, and their legs grew so sore that the children forgot, even with their prism of experience, what it felt like to have legs that didn't ache from thigh to toe. Lap after lap the Baudelaires ran, hardly taking their eyes off the circle of luminous paint that still glowed brightly on the darkening lawn, and staring at this circle was somehow the worst part of all. As the evening turned to night, the luminous circle was all the Baudelaires could really see, and it imprinted itself into their eyes so they could see it even when they were staring desperately into the darkness. If you've ever had a flash photograph taken, and the blob of the flash has stayed in your view for a few moments afterward, then you are familiar with what was happening to the Baudelaires, except the glowing circle stayed in their minds for so long that it became symbolic. The word symbolic here means that the glowing circle felt like it stood for more than merely a track, and what it stood for was zero. The luminous zero glowed in the Baudelaire minds, and it was symbolic of what they knew of their situation. They knew zero about what Genghis was up to. They knew zero about why they were running endless laps, and they had zero energy to think about it. Finally, the sun began to rise, and Coach Genghis dismissed his orphan track team. The Baudelaire stumbled blearily to the orphan's shack, too tired to even see if Duncan and Isadora were sneaking back to their dormitory after their last shift of spying. Once again, the three siblings were too tired to put on their noisy shoes, so their toes were doubly sore when they awoke, just 2 hours later, to begin another groggy day. But, and I shudder to tell you this, this was not the last groggy day for the Baudelaire orphans. The dreadful Carmelita Spatz delivered them the usual message at lunch, after they spent the morning dozing through classes and secretarial duties, and the Baudelaires put their heads on the cafeteria table in despair at the idea of another night of running. The Quagmires tried to comfort them, promising to double their research efforts, but Violet, Klaus, and Sunny were too tired for conversation, even with their closest friends. Luckily, their closest friends understood completely and didn't find the Baudelaire silence rude or discouraging. It seems impossible to believe that the three Baudelaires managed to survive another evening of SORE, but in times of extreme stress, one can often find energy hidden in even the most exhausted areas of the body. I discovered this myself when I was woken up in the middle of the night and chased 16 miles by an angry mob armed with torches, swords, and vicious dogs. and the Baudelaire orphans discovered it as they ran laps, not only for that night, but also for 6 nights following. This made a grand total of 9 SORE sessions, although grand would seem to be the wrong word for endless evenings of desperate panting, sweaty bodies, and achy legs. For 9 nights, the Baudelaire brains were plagued with the symbolic luminous zero glowing in their minds like a giant donut of despair. As the Baudelaire orphans suffered, their schoolwork suffered with them. As I'm sure you know, a good night's sleep helps you perform well in school. And so if you are a student, you should always get a good night's sleep, unless you have come to the good part of your book, and then you should stay up all night and let your schoolwork fall by the wayside, a phrase which means flunk. In the days that followed, the Baudelaires were much more exhausted than somebody who had stayed up all night reading, and their schoolwork did more than fall by the wayside. It fell off the wayside, a phrase which here has different meanings for each child. For Violet, it meant that she was so drowsy that she did not write down a single word of Mr. Amora's stories. For Klaus, it meant that he was so weary that he didn't measure a single one of Mrs. Bass's objects. And for Sunny, it meant that she was so exhausted that she didn't do anything Vice Principal Nero assigned her to do. The Baudelaire orphans believed that doing well in school was extremely important, even if the school happened to be run by a tyrannical idiot. But they were simply too fatigued from their nightly laps to do their assigned work. Before long, the circle of luminous paint was not the only zero the Baudelaire saw. Violet saw a zero at the top of her paper when she was unable to recall any of Mr. Amora's stories for a test. Klaus saw a zero in Mrs. Bass's gradebook when he was called on to report the exact length of a tube sock he was supposed to be measuring, and was discovered to be taking a nap instead. And Sunny saw a zero when she checked the staple drawer and saw that there were 0 staples inside. "This is getting ridiculous," Isadora said when Sunny updated her siblings and friends at the start of another weary lunch. "Look at you, Sunny. It was inappropriate to hire you as an administrative assistant in the first place, and it's simply absurd to have you crawl laps by night and make your own staples by day." "Don't call my sister absurd or ridiculous," Klaus cried. "I'm not calling her ridiculous," Isadora said. "I'm calling the situation ridiculous." "Ridiculous means you want to laugh at it," said Klaus, who was never too tired to define words, "and I don't want you laughing at us." "I'm not laughing at you," Isadora said. "I'm trying to help." Klaus snatched his drinking glass from Isadora's side of the table. "Well, laughing at us doesn't help at all, you cake sniffer." Isadora snatched her silverware from Klaus's hands. "Calling me names doesn't help either, Klaus." "Mum-dum!" Sunny shrieked. "Oh, stop it, both of you," Duncan said. "Isadora, can't you see that Klaus is just tired? And Klaus, can't you see that Isadora is just frustrated?" Klaus took his glasses off and returned his drinking glass to Isadora. "I'm too tired to see anything," he said. "I'm sorry, Isadora. Being tired makes me crabby. In a few days I'll turn as nasty as Carmelita Spatz." Isadora handed her silverware back to Klaus and patted him on the hand in forgiveness. "You'll never be as nasty as Carmelita Spatz," she said. "Carmelita Spatz?" Violet said, lifting her head from her tray. She had dozed through Isadora and Klaus's argument, but had woken up at the sound of the special messenger's name. "She's not coming here again to tell us to do laps, is she?" "I'm afraid she is," Duncan said ruefully, a word which here means, while pointing at a rude, violent, and filthy little girl.
"Hello, cake sniffers,"
Carmelita Spatz said.
"Today I have 2 messages for you, so I should really get 2 tips instead of 1.
"Oh, Carmelita," Klaus said. "You haven't gotten a tip for the last 9 days, and I see no reason to break that tradition."
"That's because you're a stupid orphan,"
Carmelita Spatz said promptly.
"In any case, message number 1 is the usual. Meet Coach Genghis on the front lawn right after dinner."
Violet gave an exhausted groan. "And what's the 2nd message?" she asked.
"The 2nd message is that you must report to Vice Principal Nero's office right away."
"Vice Principal Nero's office?" Klaus asked. "Why?"
"I'm sorry,"
Carmelita Spatz said, with a nasty smile to indicate she wasn't sorry one bit.
"I don't answer questions from non-tipping orphan cake sniffers."
Some children at the neighboring table laughed when they heard that and began banging their silverware on the table.
"Cake sniffing or friend's shack! Cake-sniffing orphans and me are friend's shack!
They chanted as Carmelita Spatz giggled and skipped off to finish her lunch.
Cake-sniffing orphans and me are friend's shack! Cake-sniffing orphans and me are friend's shack!
They chanted while the Baudelaire sighed and stood up on their aching legs. We'd better go to Nero's, Violet said. We'll see you later, Duncan and Isadora. Nonsense, Duncan said. We'll walk you. Carmelita Spatz has made me lose my appetite, so we'll skip lunch and take you to the administrative building. We won't go inside, otherwise there'll be no silverware between the five of us. But we'll wait outside and you can tell us what's going on. I wonder what Nero wants, Klaus said, yawning. Maybe he's discovered that Genghis is really Olaf all by himself, Isadora said, and the Baudelaire smiled back. They didn't dare hope that this was the reason for their summons to Nero's office, but they appreciated their friend's hopefulness. The five children handed their scarcely eaten lunches to the cafeteria workers, who blinked at them silently from behind their metal masks, and walked to the administrative building. The Quagmire triplets wished the Baudelaires luck, and Violet, Klaus, and Sunny trudged up the steps to Nero's office.
"Thank you for taking the time out of your busy orphan schedule to see me,"
Vice Principal Nero said, yanking open his door before they could knock.
"Hurry up and come inside. Every minute I spend talking to you is a minute I could spend practicing the violin. And when you're a musical genius like me, every minute counts."
The three children walked into the tiny office and began clapping their tired hands together as Nero raised both arms in the air.
"There are two things I wanted to talk to you about," he said when the applause was over. "Do you know what they are?"
"No, sir," Violet replied.
"No, sir,"
Nero mimicked, although he looked disappointed that the children hadn't given him a longer answer to make fun of.
"Well, the first one is that the three of you have missed 9 of my violin concerts, and each of you owes me a bag of candy for each one. 9 bags of candy times 3 equals 29. In addition, Carmelita Spatz has told me that she has delivered 10 messages to you, if you include the 2 she delivered today, and that you've never given her a tip. That's a disgrace. Now, I think a nice tip is a pair of earrings with precious stones. So you owe her 10 pairs of earrings. What do you have to say about that?"
The Baudelaire orphans looked at one another with their sleepy, sleepy eyes. They had nothing to say about that. That they'd only missed Nero's concerts because Coach Genghis had forced them to. That 9 bags of candy times 3 equals 27, not 29. And that tips are always optional and usually consist of money instead of earrings. But Violet, Klaus, and Sunny were too tired to say anything about it at all. This was another disappointment to Vice Principal Nero, who stood there scratching his pigtails and waiting for one of the children to say something that he could repeat in his nasty, mocking voice. But after a moment of silence, the Vice Principal went on to the second thing.
"The second thing," he said, going on, "is that you three have become the worst students Prufrock Preparatory School has ever seen. Violet, Mr. Amora tells me that you have flunked a test. Klaus, Mrs. Bass reports that you can scarcely tell one end of a metric ruler from another. And, Sonny, I've noticed that you haven't made a single staple. Mr. Poe told me you were intelligent and hard-working children, but you're just a bunch of cake sniffers."
At this, the Baudelaires could keep quiet no longer. "We're flunking school because we're exhausted," Violet cried. "And we're exhausted because we're running laps every night," Klaus cried. "Galooka!" Sonny shrieked, which meant, "So yell at Coach Genghis, not at us." Vice Principal Nero gave the children a big smile, delighted that he was able to answer them in his favorite way.
"We're flunking school because we're exhausted," he squealed. "And we're exhausted because we're running laps every night. Galooka!"
"I've had enough of your nonsense. Prufrock Preparatory School has promised you an excellent education. And an excellent education you will get. Or, in Sonny's case, an excellent job as an administrative assistant. Now, I've instructed Mr. Amora and Mrs. Bass to give comprehensive exams tomorrow. Large tests on absolutely everything you've learned so far. Violet, you'd better remember every detail of Mr. Amora's stories. And Klaus, you'd better remember the length, width, and depths of Mrs. Bass's objects, or I will expel you from school. Also, I've found a bunch of papers that need to be stapled tomorrow. Sonny, you will staple all of them with homemade staples, or I will expel you from your job. First thing tomorrow morning, we will have the test and the stapling, and if you don't get A's and make enough staples, you'll leave Prufrock Preparatory School. Luckily for you, Coach Genghis has offered to homeschool you. That means he'd be your coach, your teacher, and your guardian all in one. It's a very generous offer, and if I were you, I'd give him a tip too, although I don't think earrings are appropriate in this case. We're not going to give Count Olaf a tip, Violet blurted out.
Klaus looked at his older sister in horror. Violet means Coach Genghis, Klaus said quickly to Nero.
I do not, Violet cried. Klaus, our situation is too desperate to pretend not to recognize him any longer.
Hifiju,
Sunny agreed. I guess you're right, Klaus said. What have we got to lose?
What have we got to lose?
Nero mocked.
What are you talking about?
We're talking about Coach Genghis, Violet said. He's not really named Genghis. He's not even a real coach. He's Count Olaf in disguise.
Nonsense, Nero said.
Klaus wanted to say, nonsense,
right back at Nero, in Nero's own repulsive way, but he bit his exhausted tongue. It's true, he said. He's put a turban over his eyebrow and expensive running shoes over his tattoo, but he's still Count Olaf.
He has a turban for religious reasons, Nero said, and running shoes because he's a coach. Look here.
He strode over to the computer and pressed a button. The screen began to glow in its usual seasick way, and once again showed a picture of Count Olaf.
You see, Coach Genghis looks nothing like Count Olaf, and my advanced computer system proves it.
Ushilo!
Sunny cried, which meant, that doesn't prove anything.
Ushilo!
Nero mocked.
Who am I going to believe? An advanced computer system, or two children flunking school and a little baby too dumb to make her own staples. Now stop wasting my time. I will personally oversee tomorrow's comprehensive exams, which will be given in the orphan's shack. And you'd better do excellent work, or it's a free ride from Coach Genghis. Sayonara, Baudelaires!
Sayonara is the Japanese word for goodbye. And I'm sure that each and every one of the millions of people who live in Japan would be ashamed to hear their language used by such a revolting person. But the Baudelaire orphans had no time to think such international thoughts. They were too busy giving the Quagmire triplets the latest news.
This is awful,
Duncan cried as the five children trudged across the lawn so they could talk things over in peace. There's no way you can get an A on those exams, particularly if you have to run laps tonight.
This is dreadful, Isadora cried. There's no way you can make all those staples, either. You'll be homeschooled before you know it.
Coach Genghis won't homeschool us, Violet said, looking out on the front lawn, where the luminous Zero was waiting for them. He'll do something much, much worse. Don't you see? That's why he's made us run all those laps. He knew we'd be exhausted. He knew we'd flunk our classes or fail to perform our secretarial duties. He knew we'd be expelled from Prufrock Prep, and then he could get his hands on us. Klaus groaned. We've been waiting for his plan to be made clear, and now it is. But it might be too late. It's not too late, Violet insisted. The comprehensive exams aren't until tomorrow morning. We must be able to figure out a plan by then.
Plan,
Sunny agreed. It'll have to be a complicated plan, Duncan said. We have to get Violet ready for Mr. Ramora's test, and Klaus ready for Mrs. Bass's test. And we have to make staples, Isadora said, and the Baudelaires still have to run laps. And we have to stay awake, Klaus said. The children looked at one another, and then out at the front lawn. The afternoon sun was shining brightly, but the five youngsters knew that soon it would set behind the tombstone-shaped buildings, and that it would be time for S-O-R-E. They didn't have much time. Violet tied her hair up in a ribbon to keep it out of her eyes. Klaus polished his glasses and set them on his nose. Sunny scraped her teeth together to make sure they were sharp enough for any task ahead. And the two triplets took their notebooks out of their sweater pockets. Coach Genghis's evil plan had become clear through the prism of the Baudelaire and Quagmire experiences, and now they had to use their experience to make a plan of their own.
End of Disc 2.